On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee, a member of the legislature's powerful budget writing committee, Joint Finance. Here's a roadmap for our conversation. We'll look at legislation creating a missing and murdered Black women and girls task force to investigate why the statistics are so staggering and to work to end the violence. We'll touch on Black women-owned small businesses and legislative efforts to build this segment of our economy. We start with MLK Day, the fight for justice and the legacy of Dr. King in bettering our communities. How are you marking this day? What legislative policies could foster more volunteerism and community service? 800-642-1234. State Senator LaTanya Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Starting with Dr. King's powerful message of equality, if he were alive today, what do you think Dr. King would be most proud of to see, and what do you think he would be most disappointed and troubled by?
I think if Dr. King were alive today, he would be most proud of the advocacy that our young people are showing and distributing every day, from the nonviolent marches that were in the streets after George Floyd, and just the advocacy of people not being comfortable with where they are. I think the thing that he would be least proud of are some of the issues that have continued to persist since the beginning of time, since 1965, the systematic racism, the fact that African Americans are living in poverty, and seeing systematic racism in housing, in socioeconomics. I think those are the things he would be least proud of, because he fought so hard during his life to bring an end to that. And I think he would also be least proud of all of the actions taken to make sure that, you know, Black people and people of color have their right to vote continuously attacked. That was something that he was adamant about, making sure that he gave people who looked like me the opportunity to have their voices heard at the ballot box so they could elect people who look like me in an effort to help make their lives better.
I want to pick up on that last point about elections. How does teaching about Dr. King and the civil rights movement look different today, especially in the current fight for voting rights and efforts to restrict voting, and President Biden last week calling it Jim Crow 2.0?
You know, and President Biden is correct, because every time there's an election, especially a presidential election or some election involving the federal government, you see more and more states go after the voting rights of people of color, because they know that communities of color are now starting to outnumber our Caucasian communities. And if they can prevent those individuals from going to the ballot box, then they basically secured the votes in their favor. So they make it more difficult for communities of color to vote, which is extremely unfortunate, rather than trying to, you know, win over the hearts and minds of those individuals. They would just prefer to not have them participate in the election process altogether.
This is the only federal holiday designated as a national day of service to encourage all Americans to volunteer, Americans to improve our communities. What would you say is a way to serve and give back in these pandemic times?
You know, I think the way to serve, to give back during these times, is to make sure that you never stop serving. There are so many things that you can do that may not necessarily include, you know, a charitable organization. For example, if you see a young person walking down the street and it's exceptionally cold and they have on a hoodie, most cases, their parents couldn't afford a winter coat. So being able to be mindful of your neighbors, and if you see that, go to Walmart and pick up a winter coat. You know, you don't have to say that this is because I know that you can't afford a coat. You can just give it to them as, you know, a Christmas present or a holiday present. If you know there's a mom in your community that works all the time and her kids may be stuck in daycare or at home alone, making sure that those kids eat. You know, when you make dinner, just make an extra portion to provide to those families. We know that during this pandemic, especially communities of color have been hit the hardest. So we can't afford to take a day off from providing service, even if that service isn't recognized by anybody else but you. We have a commitment to make sure that our communities, that our neighbors are okay during this pandemic, especially those children that are most vulnerable that don't have the means to provide for themselves.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with LaTonya Johnson. Democratic State Senator represents people from downtown Milwaukee to the city's western neighborhoods. You can join in. How are you marking the life and the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. today? What is your service to your community like, and how do you live that each day? 800-642-1234 to join in. Child care and children is one issue you pay such close attention to. And in the pandemic, providers have been really hurting for staff. Some have had to cut back on how many children they can take. And now with the Omicron surge, what is the next step, policy step, to address the child care crisis?
I think one of the ways to address the child care crisis is to make sure that our providers are okay, to make sure that they have the resources that they need. One of the most expensive things for child care providers right now are masks. A lot of times those little ones, you know, they forget their mask at home. And so it's the daycare or the school's responsibility to provide additional masks if we want to keep other people safe in the schools. My daughter is a K-4 teacher, and that's one of the expenses that she talks about. You know, they get a box of masks a week, but that's not necessarily enough for a 4K class. But, you know, it hurts the provider to have to provide those things. And testing is extremely important. Sometimes those providers have maybe enough tests just for their staff, but not enough for the children. And that can cause spread and cause those classrooms to have to shut down to sanitize or to make sure that, you know, our kiddos are quarantining the way that they are supposed to. One of the biggest things that we can do to help our childcare providers, and especially to help those daycares stay open so our parents can go back to work and help this economy, is to make sure that if your child is old enough and eligible for a vaccine, that we get that. So we're not overwhelming Children's Hospital with, you know, a whole bunch of COVID cases, because we know that there is a very vulnerable population for children under 5 that can't get vaccinated. And that goes for the teachers too as well. But we have to find a way to compensate our providers. Even when our teachers and our providers are in the classroom, if they have close contact, you know, if their classrooms shut down, they can go virtual, but if they're sick, they can't participate at all. So we have to protect our providers as well as protecting those children that are most vulnerable. And we have to make sure that we pay our providers what they're worth. They're one of the most important aspects during this pandemic, right up there with nurses and doctors, to make sure that we can keep this economy going.
We're talking with State Senator LaTonya Johnson of Milwaukee. The FBI released data last fall that showed about 4 Black women and girls were killed per day in 2020. Should Wisconsin move forward with a bill to create a task force to work on this crisis of missing and murdered Black women and girls? How does this hit home? women of color business owners, how has it been going for you? How are you growing your business? What barriers have held back your business plans? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with State Senator Johnson here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee. Governor Evers last year allocated millions of dollars to the Diverse Business Assistance Grant Program, citing a statistic that Black-owned businesses took the biggest hit during the pandemic, with over half of Black business owners reporting revenue drops of 50% or more, much more than their white counterparts. Are you a minority business owner? Do you feel supported by state efforts in these times? What legislation could dramatically affect your small business this year? 800-642-1234, State Senator LaTanya Johnson with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's talk about minority-owned businesses. With the $75 million through the Diverse Business Assistance Grant Program, application deadline this Friday, by the way, funding through ARPA, how would you characterize the situation that minority-owned businesses face in these times?
You know, minority-owned businesses face just extreme challenges because a lot of those businesses tend to be in minority communities. And we all know that the socioeconomic makeup of a lot of those communities are impoverished. So they are providing services to communities that are already in poverty. So there isn't a lot of wiggle room for those businesses to rebound after they face catastrophic conditions. The thing that made me most angry during this pandemic was the fact that our state sat on a rainy day fund that had more than enough resources to allocate funds to those businesses that were hit hardest. Not just minority businesses, but businesses, period. And we chose to do absolutely nothing. Except wait for opera funds to come into our communities to try and remedy those situations. And then so many of my Republican colleagues signed on to a letter asking the federal government not to send money into the state. It's beyond selfish. It's careless. And so to expect these businesses to pick themselves up by their bootstraps the same way that they expect impoverished people to do that with absolutely no opportunity makes absolutely no sense. Right now, our state is sitting on $1.7 billion in our rainy day fund. And if a global pandemic is not a rainy day, then I don't know what the hell is, because we foregoed $1.6 billion simply by not expanding Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So resources, financial resources, is definitely not an issue that this state has, but we choose not to do enough for the people who call Milwaukee home or Wisconsin home. And that's extremely upsetting to me, to see so many of our businesses struggle and so many of them close unnecessarily when we could easily do what's necessary to make sure that those businesses survive.
Beyond the rainy day fund, what should lawmakers do to build up Black entrepreneurs and minority-owned businesses? I mean, what would you like to see in terms of policy?
I would like to see, in terms of policy, them make just a commitment to minority-owned businesses. For example, at the state level, minority-owned businesses should be entitled to state business, but it's a 5% goal. It's mm-hmm. not a requirement. And the only reason we can't make it a requirement is because my Republican colleagues will not allow that to happen. just simple changes like that, making sure that we include minority-owned businesses when we give out state contracts, could go a really, really long way. Making sure that there is a form of incubation centers for minority-owned businesses, making sure that, you know, our WITIC resources don't just concentrate mostly on those businesses that are making, you know, $500,000 or $400,000 annually, but creating smaller amounts that would include those minority-owned businesses, creating state grants that would specifically go toward minority-owned businesses to allow them to stay in business and provide services to their communities. You know, people in minority communities deserve to have the opportunity to walk to work too, the same as they do in a lot of our Caucasian communities. Wisconsin, especially Milwaukee, is so segregated that we have to provide those services in order to see those communities thrive, because we know minority-owned businesses do an excellent job of hiring other minorities. So we have a commitment to make sure that those businesses are thriving, just to make sure that our communities of color can continue to not only just survive, but to thrive as well.
And I just also want to follow up with one thing here, that next Monday at this time, we will meet with the head of Wisconsin's Supplier Diversity Program that is helping businesses, minority-owned businesses, land state contracts. So I just wanted to put that mention in there. We're talking with LaTanya Johnson, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee, looking at pressing issues in these times, policy changes she wants to make. You can join in 800-642-1234. You've introduced legislation that would create a task force on missing and murdered African American women and girls. Can you tell us about this bill?
Yes, this bill is designed to shed a spotlight on the fact that African American women go missing at a significantly higher rate. They're murdered at a significantly higher rate than our white counterparts. Basically, this task force will dive into the causes and what we can do to make sure that those missing individuals are found and brought home to their families. So many times these women and young girls go missing, they're never found, and they're very seldomly heard of. And we need to change that. We need to make sure that the media knows that this is an issue, that our communities know that this is an issue, and that we're doing everything to bring those women and girls back home to the community.
Let's take a call on this. John joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, John.
Good morning. Regarding the epidemic of missing Black women and Black girls, and it is a problem, and we should talk about it on MLK's birthday. My question is, in these areas, the mayors, the police chiefs, and the prosecutors are all Democrats. When they do this task force, I would encourage them to look at the fact that it is almost always Black men who are making these girls and women disappear. Why aren't they being hunted down? Why aren't they being prosecuted and put into prison for long periods of time? We know who's
okay, doing it. I want Senator Johnson here to respond there. Go ahead.
I think that that's the purpose of the task force. We don't know that these individuals who are causing them to go missing are always Black men, because these individuals are missing, they haven't been found. In most cases, there are no prosecutions. These cases are open. So until we know that for sure, until we can find out the source, we can't automatically say that these are Black men that are causing them to go missing, because in so many cases, the resources are lacking to make sure that we can devote the resources, the time, the skill that's necessary to find out where these victims are. The one thing that we do know is that they do not get the time and the attention that's needed from the media to resolve these issues. And what the other thing that we also know is that in communities where the mayors are Democrats and the police chiefs are Democrats, those communities tend to lack the resources because we have Republicans at the helm that are responsible for allocating those resources. Milwaukee is the number one tourist attraction. We generate more income than any other county in this state, but yet we do not get the proportion of the dollars back in terms of the dollars that we send to the state. And when Milwaukee comes and, you know, they ask for additional resources to address issues like crime, like public safety, and like services, we're always met with, you know, we're doing a lot for Milwaukee compared to the other counties. Well, if Milwaukee wasn't there, the other counties would suffer as well.
And State Senator Johnson, we are out of time. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A quick programming heads up on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We have two special broadcasts. At noon, it's a rebroadcast of the 2021 official Wisconsin celebration and tribute, hosted by WPR's Dr. Jonathan Overby. Then at 8 this evening, it's a special MLK Day edition of Why Race Matters. That's hosted by PBS Wisconsin's Angela Fitzgerald. More is at WPR.org. Now to recruiting police officers and a Republican bill package. Here's Assembly Speaker Robin Voss at a news conference earlier this month highlighting the financial benefits of the package to attract new people to the force.
If you're in law enforcement right now, you would receive up to $2,000 bonus for being on the job. If you are somebody who's a new hire or thinking about going into law enforcement, we would actually give a recruitment bonus for every single person who comes onto the force.
Courtesy of WTMJ-TV, are you a police officer, a deputy, a police chief? What is morale like in your department? Are you able to fill vacancies? 800-642-1234. Jim Palmer is executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, the state's largest union of law enforcement officers. Jim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Well, lay it out for us, if you will. What is the workforce situation like in policing in Wisconsin? What are we facing here?
Well, by every indicator, it is definitely a growing problem and an area of concern, not only for law enforcement, but for public safety and officer safety. What we've seen over the last 10 years is a pretty significant decline in the number of law enforcement officers working throughout the state. From 2010 to 2020, there's a decrease of law enforcement of about 2%. At the same time, our population, according to the latest census figures, has increased by 4%. You know, and we're seeing, again, some additional increases in things like violent crime. In 2020, Wisconsin saw an 8.5% increase in violent crime, which is well above the, about 5% increase that we saw nationally. So these are some significant, very significant issues. You know, we're also seeing, lastly, a very significant increase in the number of officers in this state that are assaulted in the line of duty. Just from 2017 to 2020, there's been about a 42% increase in the number of officers assaulted in the line of duty. So, according to the best information available, latest information from 2020, more than 1,100 officers throughout Wisconsin were assaulted while they were on the job.
You had mentioned violent crimes and the surge there. The pandemic has brought a whole different set of circumstances that police officers are facing. Could the increase in violent crimes, could that be contributing to these departures?
I think that is one of several factors. Certainly the increase in violent crime that we've seen is one. I think, some of the public attention or scrutiny that has been, confronted the law enforcement profession in some regards unfairly, I think, has also exacerbated the problem. But regardless of where I travel throughout the state, I hear from agencies of all shapes and sizes that they're having a very difficult time getting an adequate number of applicants. You know, departments where you used to literally get dozens of applicants for each open position, many agencies now are reporting that they're unable to get, a number of applicants that equals the number of positions open. So that's a really concerning problem and something that, you know, I think the law enforcement community certainly is cognizant of, and the general public needs to be aware of as well.
What effect do high-profile police killings have on officers departing, you know, the death of George Floyd, the death of Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, the aggressive tactics some officers used against Black Lives Matter protesters? Can you look at this exodus through the lens of justice?
I think there is a component of that, certainly. You know, law enforcement is one of those rare professions where, you know, an officer in another state or another part of the country can be involved in a controversial incident that garners a lot of national media attention, and it impacts officers all across the country and here in Wisconsin. And, you know, the law enforcement profession is very rare, I think, unique in that regard. And so I do think there is some of that, which is why, as we've discussed in previous discussions, you know, why our organization's been commissioning an annual statewide poll for the last 10 years. Because, you know, we've tried to show not only the general public, but members of our own profession here in the state that the public does hold law enforcement in high regard. And are there things that we can do to strengthen the relationship between law enforcement officers and the communities they serve? Absolutely. And we think our organization and law enforcement generally has been working to do that.
And you're talking about the annual public policing on issues that you do each year, starting back in 2013, I believe, you know, related to policing in the communities. Through those surveys through the years, is there anything that the public feels really strongly about as it relates to recruitment or training or retention of officers? Or is there nothing really in the questions that you ask that would parlay to those issues?
Well, I think one thing that stands out in particular is that across all demographic categories, Wisconsinites, according to our polling, have a strong support of training. And they want officers to be very well trained. And here in Wisconsin, we have some of the highest and most rigorous training and certification standards of anywhere in the country. And we think that's a good thing. That's a good thing for the men and women in the profession and also for the public and the communities that they serve. We pose a lot of questions about the type of policing that they want, and there is enormous support for community policing efforts and for body-worn cameras. When we look at the demographic categories, that is, what we find is that minority respondents in particular have a much higher degree of support for things like body-worn cameras and community-oriented policing. And so that, I think that, it's clear the general public, rather, want more officers in their communities, not less, which is, I think, sometimes something that gets distorted in the public discourse. When we read some of the results of our other polling questions, you know, we see that the general public just doesn't want more boots on the ground. They're telling us what kind of policing they want, and that's something that we should try and be sensitive to.
We're talking with Jim Palmer, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, as we look at a bill package aimed at recruiting police officers. You can join in with your insights, 800-642-1234. One bill in the package would offer signing bonuses to first-time officers, and the bill would also give additional money to officers who have out-of-state experience. What do you see in this package around money and bonuses? And also, why encourage new or out-of-state officers to apply?
Well, I think anything we can do to increase the number of officers in the state is good for public safety. It's good for officer safety. And again, Wisconsin does have some very rigorous training and certification standards. So even an officer coming from out of state is going to have to meet those standards, the standards that we hold up high here in this state. I think it's important with regard to this package of bills I think we're generally supportive of them. Our organization was not involved in their drafting. And I think the real most important purpose that these bills serve is that they really do shine a light on some of the recruiting and staffing issues and the challenges that law enforcement is facing across the state. With regard to signing bonuses, I'm sure, you know, there isn't an officer in the state that wouldn't like a signing bonus or some kind of increase in their compensation that allows them to that recognizes their service. I don't know, you know, they're one of the other dynamics that has contributed, I think, to the decline in the number of officers in Wisconsin is the fact that, you know, in the wake of some of the collective bargaining reforms in 2011, law enforcement officers are largely unable to bargain with regard to their health insurance. And, you know, that is something that has impacted and continues to impact law enforcement officers across the state. In fact, right now, the city of Racine, we're involved in litigation with them. They're trying to take away retiree health insurance, which is something that they had have had for many years and that they've bargained for. Now they're trying to use the collective bargaining laws enacted in 2011 as a basis to strip retirees of that protection, of that those health services. So I think, you know, all these things have kind of combined to exacerbate and contribute to, you know, what a pretty troubling decline in the number of officers throughout the state.
I want to circle back to something you said here. It's surprising to me that your organization was not involved in drafting this bill package. Is this something you would have wanted to be involved in?
Certainly, absolutely. I mean, you know, we are involved in a lot of the vast majority of bills that touch law enforcement. Lawmakers will reach out to us, and on some of these bills that did occur. I think these bills are well-intentioned for the most part. And again, they do shine a light on a pretty troubling decline in the number of officers. But I think these bills, you know, by some of the primary sponsors, were held pretty close to the vest.
I wonder, when departments don't have enough officers on patrol duties, what happens then? Do they move officers from other units? How do you cover patrol duties if you don't have enough officers on the force?
Well, it incurs a significant increase in overtime costs. Officers are ordered to work overtime. It's much more difficult for them to get time off and get the vacation time that they deserve and that they need. And so really puts a strain on the officers that are currently working in an agency. Some departments have taken, you know, detectives and officers that wouldn't normally be work on patrol and put them on patrol for shifts just to cover, you know, their minimum staffing levels that they need to for different shifts. And so it is a very significant problem.
Let's go to Lisa now in Appleton. Lisa, hi.
Hi.
What is on your mind?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, if I was going into a, you know, a career and I was getting a bonus, why would I want to go into a career that's at risk? It's the crime rate's going up, as you say. So I think it's putting the money in the wrong place. Like, why don't we do things, because the tough on crime era hasn't worked to reduce our crime out there. People don't want to go into these positions to get hurt or be subjective to, you know, doing their job. So why don't we train either the people that are there right now or help the people that are committing the crimes, because the tough on crime era is obviously not helping Wisconsin.
Lisa, thank you. Jim Palmer.
Well, I appreciate the question, and I think there's some validity to that that perspective. You know, I think we've long learned, or we should have learned, that, you know, being tough on crime is not always the same as being smart on crime. You know, we do here in Wisconsin, the law enforcement community undergoes a significant degree of training, and their certification standards and their and recertification that they have to undergo constantly each year, a lot of training. And so there are a number of proposals in this package that was recently introduced that do get at that and you know, make those training funds more accessible to local governments throughout the state. And obviously, in the end result, would increase the training opportunities for officers. And I think that would be a good thing. But and incidentally, you know, the officer shortage in the state also impacts the ability of officers to get training. And if they are ordered to work overtime in order to and can't get the time off, it's not uncommon for officers to, it's much more difficult for them to get the time off they need to get the training and get additional training. And so some of the proposals, I think, would help ameliorate that a little bit. But I do think that, it's anything we can do to shine a light on the troubling decline in the number of officers throughout the state, and I think it's a good thing. And I think that we also have to be mindful of, other law enforcement strategies like community-oriented policing and doing what we can to, bolster those services. Obviously, that's something that would, when we talk about defunding the police or significantly cutting law enforcement funding, that impairs and undermines any agency's ability to engage in community-oriented policing. And so that's something we need to be aware of.
We have the head of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, Jim Palmer, as we look at a Republican backed package aimed at recruiting police officers. Has your community struggled to recruit and retain new officers? What effect is the churn having on your community? Have you recently retired from the force? How has policing changed over the decades? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Jim Palmer here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about police officer recruitment and the future of the law enforcement profession with a Republican bill package. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A survey last year of nearly 200 police departments found a significant increase in resignations year over year. But it was the retirements that jumped out, a 45% spike in the retirement rate. That's from the nonprofit Police Executive Research Forum. Are you an officer? What do you think will keep you and your fellow officers in the profession? Can you make a clear connection to calls for police reform to officers vacating the force? Still time, 800-642-1234. We have Wisconsin Professional Police Association Executive Director Jim Palmer with us for about seven more minutes. Let's go to Margaret now in Milwaukee. Hi, Margaret. What is on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And thank you for the police work that is being done. My question has to do with technology. I wondered if policemen feel like technology is changing their jobs in good ways. It seems to me like we read about various things. I don't know, like you can focus in on where a gun was fired or various things. And is it actually helpful to police? Do they feel like it's making their jobs better, more effective?
And technology, a very broad word there, Margaret. I mean, my initial thoughts is body cams. When you think of technology, what do you think about, Margaret?
I was thinking about technology, yes, body cams, but also the use of data, figuring out from data, maybe behavioral things, the use of computers on the force. Does that make certain jobs, perhaps desk jobs, somewhat obsolete, and you can concentrate those, get more people out on the street? It is a broad topic, but that's what I was curious about.
Interesting. Jim Palmer.
Well, that is a broad topic, so I'll try and tackle it broadly. But I think to answer Margaret's question, I think technology has helped law enforcement significantly, whether it's with body cameras or the use of data and other resources. I think it's important to note that, law enforcement is often behind the curve of some of the technological challenges or gains that are made in the criminal element. I mean, just as the general public, our technology is growing all the time and improving, it takes law enforcement has to oftentimes catch up. And so it's not a kind of a one for one or kind of proposition. And so anytime there is new technology that's introduced into an agency, there are also some challenges with that and some growing pains, so to speak, whether we're talking about, drones or the use of cameras or the use of data and how that's used. And there are privacy concerns, which are legitimate. But those are things that, local governments and law enforcement agencies have to ferret out in a way that, those that are committing crimes don't have to.
the new technology as well, even the use of data, that too takes money. Those police departments need the money to buy that technology. And I would imagine, Jim, that too can be a barrier.
It certainly can, you know, with regard to, you know, body-worn cameras probably provide the best example of that. You know, the cameras themselves are not necessarily significant. It's how to storage all the data that those cameras collect. And then it's all, you know, the public records and public access considerations that have to be accounted for. And, you know, here in Wisconsin, the law enforcement community has worked with lawmakers to develop some firm guidelines and retention periods and things that don't exist in a lot of other states. And so I think that's good, but it does kind of highlight, you know, how there are a lot of cost considerations that go with that technology. And you know, sometimes agencies have to decide whether or not they want more officers or do they want certain technological resources. And that can be a difficult prospect to consider.
Jim Palmer with us, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. Let's go to Joe now, joining us from Superior. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I have a question about the lack of support on the part of law enforcement organizations, including police unions and so on, for reasonable gun safety measures. We've seen a huge proliferation of guns in this country, and yet I don't see law enforcement coming out vociferously in support of efforts to try and get a handle on that. I just heard a report on NPR this morning about the threat to police officers from this proliferation of guns. And yet, where is law enforcement in coming out strongly in support of this? We see Kyle Rittenhouse walking the streets of Kenosha and getting high fives instead of questioning why do we have people walking our streets with high-powered rifles. I guess I'm just asking, why aren't we seeing more effort on the part of law enforcement to support these measures, reasonable gun safety measures?
Joe, thank you. Jim Palmer.
Well, I think that's a great question, and it's a very fair question. You know, as the state's largest law enforcement group, our organization has been involved in these discussions at the state level. And, you know, we've supported legislation to make it difficult or to eliminate, you know, straw man purchases where someone purchases a gun for someone who isn't otherwise able to do so under the law. You know, I think when we publicly polled on this issue in the past, we see that Wisconsinites are pretty divided on it. And not surprisingly, officers are divided on it as well, depending on where they work. We see that, for example, that officers in more urban areas do have a kind of a stronger position relative to guns, whereas, you know, officers in rural areas or northern parts of the state where, you know, things like hunting are more, you know, a part of the cultural norm, you know, the views towards guns are much different. So it's a complex problem, and I think we have been involved in the discussion. One of the things that we've tried to you know, shine a light on, for example, not only with our members and officers throughout the state, but also with the general public, is the significant number of officer-involved shootings that involve people confronting officers with guns. You know, when we first started collecting data, and, you know, I think the state is going to start collecting this data now under some new legislation that was passed, but we started collecting this data 10 years ago on officer-involved shootings and reporting it publicly. And, you know, when we first started doing so, it was about 55% generally.
And we only have a couple seconds left.
So, yeah. So now, you know, in the last 2 years, we've seen 68%.
And you're listening to the Ideas Network.